Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
Holiday, which is New Year's Eve. I hope everybody is going to be safe. Enjoy yourself. I thought I might take time out for a show on Saturday, because like I said, I'm trying to get in the rhythm of doing the show from Monday through Saturday. I think 7 o'clock is a good time to do this, the evening time. I think it's going to be great. I'm just looking forward. I'm excited for so much that's going on. I pray you guys call in 347-677-1749. Let's see. Something I didn't do. Okay. I'm letting everyone know that we are on the air right now. Oh, I forgot Twitter. You see, you guys, let me say this about me, all these different social medias. I'm trying to organize myself where I'm getting all this information out to everybody, but it's so hard. Gosh, it's so hard because I got to remember all these different websites I'm on. Through the Eyes of a Black Woman does not have her own website just yet. If you want to contact me, you can catch me at Sensible64. You can also catch me here on Blog Talk Radio on Say Your Peace Network. I'm trying to push that, too. Again, if you want any time on here, please let me know. I have some hours open. I have the 8 o'clock hour open for Monday to Saturday, Sunday, whatever you want. It's open if you guys want that hour. Well, on Sunday, let me get my schedule right. On Sunday, I have 7 to 9 open on Monday through, from Monday through Saturday, I have from 8 to 9 open. Now, I can always change around Through the Eyes of the Black Woman if I need to, but I'm offering you guys those time slots to be open for you. So if you're interested in any time, please let me know. This is fun. All the people who don't know how to do it, you're just listening in. This is fun. I really, really, really enjoy this. And I'll do my best to help you in any way that you need to. If possible, you can go to Say Your Peace Network. It's sensible64.wix.com/Say Your Peace Network. If you go to that website, you'll see all the information about getting a show on this network. So I'm excited about tonight, really excited. I've been waiting for this book to come in. I'm going to eventually buy it, but my husband wound up getting it for me for right now through the library because I think it's a wonderful book. And I wanted to start a segment tonight, and it's called, the book is called The Stolen Woman, Stolen Women, and it's by Dr. Gail Wyatt. She's actually a sex researcher. She basically breaks down why we're at the point when it comes to sex the way we are now at it. Why do we have the impression of what sex is really is when it comes to the African-American woman, which I think it is great. Before we get started right there, I want to also tell you, you can call in at 347-677-1749, 347-677-1749. And you know you can always go back and listen to the show if you don't hear it at this time. If you don't call in at this time, you can always call back. You can always listen to the show at any time, which I think is a great, great thing. I think this is going to be a great segment, and I'm going to try to at least go through halfway through the book with this because it's got so much pertinent information in it about us, and I think it's very appropriate for Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. Okay, before we get started, I'm going on with all this stuff. I want to get all this stuff out my head before. So I would like for you guys to take time out and check out this petition that I'm trying to get signed. I need 25,000 signatures. I know that's a lot of signatures. But if you know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody, please take time out. It's pertaining to the Jason Smith story. As you know, I had Mr. Smith on my show several times. And we're trying to get a petition to get the attention of President Obama. And the name of the petition is http://wh.gov/QKLO. QKLO. It's the name of the petition. And we're looking for anybody that you know, once you read the story, please feel free to get someone sign the petition and then share it with anybody you want to share it with to get as many signatures as you can. You guys, that campaign is not an easy campaign because lots of people don't like to sign in because they think it's the White House. Ooh, they're watching. But it's for a good cause, and if he sees that, I think that would be awesome. I'm not saying that we can't get 25,000 by January 23rd, but it would be so awesome if we could. Really, really, really would. It's not only me doing it, I have Mr. Coleman doing it too, so. And I'm trying to make sure everybody is sharing. So, let me see if I can get my chat room open. Let's see, before we get started. I can always add on some more time if I don't get a chance to get everything going. Well, it's a Saturday night, and I know everybody doesn't want to be sitting at home listening to me on the radio, but I'm praying that you are on the computer listening, and I hope I'm teaching you some stuff, and I hope you guys can take some of this stuff. And then you as women, African-American women, can understand and learn from why we're the way we are now. Okay. The name of the book is Stolen Women, and it's by Dr. Gail Wyatt. This book, and the first thing she does is she expresses what this book is not about. She said it's not sex-related racial differences. It's not an in-depth. It is an in-depth analysis. It's about the lifelong effects of our early sexual experiences, and this is not about African American men. So take that out. It's not about African American men. Basically, she's a sex researcher, so she's trying to get us to understand why we're who we are. Okay. It starts out saying what happens on the auction block centuries ago is still unfinished business for African American women today. Now, how do you see that? I mean, how would you see that? If you think in society increasingly obsessed with sex, too many people, white and black, still hold it dangerous views that black women must either ignore their sexuality together or be perpetual sexually accountable, available. We're always available for sex, which is not true. And that really teased me off because that's how sometimes people portray us or other races portray us. Okay, this causes the devalue and deny respect and information to the black woman. Now, let's talk about the word devalue. Devalue, as we know, the word value means it has some worth to it. When you devalue something, it no longer has that worth. And we've allowed, and I say we, and it comes from us not knowing, we've allowed ourselves to be devalued. Why? I don't know. It's something we've got to think about. You know, we really have. We've allowed ourselves to be devalued. And then we continue to do it because we let other people, we've devalued ourselves, then now we let other people devalue us, which, you know, that's something we need to work on. Okay, as long as we continue to allow others to define our sexual image, okay, we will remain as our own, as our ancestors were stolen women. Let's talk a little about slavery, which ripped into the hearts and souls of African women, altering their culture, their families, and most intimacy of their sexuality. Now, it would be naive to think that time has healed those wounds or to believe that they are no longer relevant to the sexual experience of African American women today. We know that this is generational. Not only is it ancestral, it's generational. The image of our ancestors as a free people without chains before slavery changed their destinies. We never saw that. We have never visualized us without the chains. And because we were chained, it changed our whole destiny of who we are. Okay, let's discuss African society and their ways of sex, or how they dealt with sex. Now, it says in the Hausa and the Nupe, of Nigeria, they forbade sexual contact before marriage. Something like we would push nowadays if we would actually do it, but we don't do that anymore for some reason. A man who had sex with you before the appointed time and spoiled the ceremonies that marked a turning point in your life was viewed as a thief who had stolen something precious from you. It was almost like, even though in the mindset it might have been consensual sex before marriage, but because of their rituals and their ceremonies, that was another form of rape, because it was not in the line up with how the ceremony went from you being a little girl to a woman. So that actually ritual, in the other sense, that was not one of the rituals that you were allowed to sleep with the girl. In other words, you raped her. It says, let's talk about pregnancy. Now, in some tribes, having a child out of wedlock generally was not tolerated. It was branded morally wrong. Now, let's think about today and how some of this did cross over from back then to now. If you have any comments, call in at 347-677-1749, 347-677-1749. I would love to hear your comments about this. Okay, now, such as pregnancy brought shame to a girl and her family, the father was held financially responsible when the child was born. Okay, regardless, there was no child support, there was no court making you pay for this child that was born out of wedlock. That was just the way it was. You financially took care of that child. Now, like I said, in some ways, this resembles today's society. Even though in some families we have accepted the ideal that pregnancy out of wedlock became a social norm. Even though back then in their culture, that was not. But if it happened, there was no going to no court. There was no chasing a man down. He automatically knew he had an obligation to take care of that baby. Now, the body in African society was respected. Western missionaries taught some Africans that the body was not about sex, or it was about sex. Okay? It says the breast in the African society was not regarded as a sexual object, but as a symbol of life, which I think is wonderful, beautiful, awesome. Therefore, it was not unusual for mothers to nurse their babies in public or women to be seen bare-chested. And as you can see in some African culture, they still do. The women still walk around bare-chested. When the genitals and buttocks were always covered, Africans then, they considered the body sacred. Not sexual, but sacred. So you take the breath, they were a symbol of life. You take the genitals, were constantly always covered, and they thought of the body as being a sacred thing. Okay. Children were often cared for not only by their mother and extended family members, but by other women in the village as well. And that's where I think we get the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Because not only did you raise your child, other people in the village, not only did your grandparents and your cousins, even the other women in the building, in the village, actually helped you raise your child, which I think is marvelous. Okay, let's talk about role models. Before we talk about role models, I want to take a break, and we'll be back.
Starved, I'll be there to feed.
All right, you guys, we are back. That was a little Aretha Franklin, Daydreaming, and Barbara Mason, Yes, I'm Ready. You know, those old songs. Some of you probably don't remember them, but those are some old songs from back in the day. And I love old songs. Okay, now, let's talk about role models. And like I said before, we're discussing the book Stolen Women by Dr. Gail Wyatt. Okay. Let's see here. Talking about the role models. Okay. It says the older women in the tribe taught the girls their responsibilities as wives and mothers. Something we don't do nowadays. They also taught them when to have sex and when to refrain from it while nursing a baby or until a child begins to walk. And in this way, young married women learn how to plan and space their children, which we do not have to this day. We do not have that because, in my reasoning, before I say my reasoning, it says when girls became women, they knew what was expected of them, for their elders had prepared them well for the roles they would assume. Man. It says, as we know in today's society, we have a curse in a sense, of babies having babies. Before anybody can teach them the roles and their responsibilities in society, they're already moms. Which, you know, I don't know, maybe in this book we can find out what happened. I'm hoping that there is a solution to why our girls are having babies. I still to this day don't understand it. It says fear was used to frighten girls into retaining their virginity. And one of them was said that the sight of the penis was said to be enough to make a girl pregnant. It did not have to enter the vagina to land her into trouble. So just the talk of saying that just the sight of a penis, in other words, I'm saying, but just the sight of a penis made a girl say, okay, look, I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. God, I'm scared, and mom and dad doesn't want me to do this, so I'm not going to do it. We know, because of today's society, the sight of a penis lures our young girls straight to it. Not all of them, but some of them. Now, let's talk about the girl and the rituals of her becoming a woman. Now, one of the rituals was circumcision, and there's three forms of circumcision. There's a clitoridectomy, the excision, and the infibulation, and we're going to discuss all three of those real quick here. Excuse me if you hear my dog in here barking. I apologize for that. Clitoridectomy, excuse me, I hope I'm saying that right, or removal of a part of the clitoris. Now, to incision, in which the clitoris and part of the labia minora are removed. That's the excision. In infibulation, the most extreme form of circumcision, the clitoris was removed, the labia was cut, and the vulva was sewn together. Only a small slit was left open for her to urinate and have her period. Man. Now, you got to remember, this was back in the day. This is African culture, and that's how they did women. Now, the question is, why would any society do this to their girls? Now, some tribes was concerned with hygiene, and they believed that the external genitalia made a woman unclean. Back then, I'm not going to say they didn't have dish, douche. I know they had soap and water, but, I mean, That's the way they did things. Others wanted their girls to remain virgins until the proper time and thought that circumcision would control their sexual urges. All right. And then some thought circumcision would protect females from sexually aggressive men, making them more difficult to penetrate and therefore less desirable. Wow. Now, we have to keep in mind African women who grew up in these societies where circumcision was condoned, it was often viewed as an inevitable, predictable rite of passage that were underscored the value of their sexuality. So these women automatically accepted this because this was their rite of passage. It prepared them for womanhood. Now, we're going to talk about protected and accustomed. Now, African women were accustomed to living within strict boundaries. As we know in today's society, sex has long gone lost its strict boundaries in every aspect of the word. Strict and boundaries. Sexual contact between certain people were prohibited. Sexual relationships between the following was definitely prohibited, which we know doesn't go right now. It's not even in the agenda or the way of life or the way society is ran. A man and his mother-in-law, a woman and her father-in-law, and between teenage brothers and sisters. We know that is prohibited. Well, it's supposed to be prohibited. That's even in the Bible. But guess what? Mm-mm. It was done, and it's still being done today. Sexual practices that were not condoned, adultery, rape, incest, or homosexual relationships. As you know, back then, homosexual was not something you did. Intimacy with forbidden relative or sex with a domestic animal was also a taboo. So the myth that it was all right for you to have sex with an animal, a domesticated animal, is not true. It was taboo. Even though some people did it, it was not what, according to this, that we did. I say we because even though, you know, that was just something you didn't do. Now, we will not deny that some of the rituals pertaining to the African woman was very harmful to her, such as different types of the various types of circumcision and her role in the family. We should not overlook the fact that African women not only knew what to do and to expect, but that she understood the ritual purposes and social consequences of these rules as well. So she was not dumb. She knew what her position was, where she stood, and how she did things. She knew that because it was taught to her as a young girl. Now, moreover, she knew that she was treasured and protected with these rituals because, like I said, you could not just have sex with them. You know, if you didn't go through the proper channels, you were not allowed to touch the girls. And you had to wait till they were married. So they had rituals. You know, they want to place us or put us out like we were savages or something. And we really weren't. We were not savages at all. We had standards. They call them rituals. They're standards. Certain things you could not do. You were forbade to do them. So, you know, you did what you were supposed to do. Then it says, then here comes the white missionaries in the 16th century. This is when the missionaries start going to Africa. And based on their own values, they looked at sexual practices and rituals established by African communities, assured that they were sinful, making them think what they thought, how they felt about themselves, was sinful. The woman being bare-chested, that was the way they turned it into something sexual. It was sinful. It also says a Western physician described African women, as hot, unconstitutioned ladies. What? type of language was used to help justify an institutionalized slavery. This was a prelude to building up the reason why we need to be in captive. We need to be taught that our bodies are really not sacred, that our bodies was automatically sexual. I mean, look what they called us, hot and unconstitutional ladies. I don't know, I can't talk tonight. Okay, so think about that. Now we're going to talk about what the new world brought to us. Okay, we have Green Beasley has logged in on the chat. I want to tell you hello. I hope you can hear me. Hope you have any questions, please feel free to ask. You know, call in 347-677-1749. Now, back to what I was saying. It says, with the new world came the new sexual order. And we're going to break those down. It says, institutional slavery irrevocably altered the sexuality of stolen Africans and their descendants. There was no more sacred. This changed everything for us. We no longer felt that we were precious, protected, and treasured anymore as women. It says, the next several hundred years, a new sexual order emerged for black women in the new world that sabotaged our old way. Okay. Okay, let's see. Over the next several years, sabotage the old way of doing things, the way Africans, our ancestors, actually, like I said, kept us sacred and protected. Okay, it says, these are some six ways will show us what took place, how this took place. It says, number one, sex became a negative experience. Okay. I'm sorry, you guys, I'm answering Mr. Green Beasley. I'm just going to answer you. I am going over, I'm sorry, you guys, the book. Okay. Sex became a negative experience. Instead of it being a positive thing or the way that we procreated back then, it became a negative thing. And why? Why did we think it became a negative thing? Because it was no longer, it says, taken out of its cultural and natural context, okay, sex became something to be dreaded because guess what? Majority of the time it was being taken. It was no longer an experience marked by family approval, sanctioned as a function of marriage or celebrated by rituals. As a slave, you had no rights over your body. I mean, that right there tells you. Your first sexual experience most likely would have been rape. As a result, virginity was not desired anymore. And it wasn't expected of the women being a virgin because they already knew what was going to happen. Regardless of the circumstance, it was assumed that you wanted to have sex with white men. They just automatically assumed that you had desires to sleep with the white man, which we didn't. It says, in reality, however, in order to avoid being severely punished, black women had to submit to any white man who made sexual demands on her. So her rights were already taken away from her. There goes the word stolen. There was no longer, she had no rights. to her body and who could touch her. It says, as some were given a choice, Cynthia's decision was typical. And this is a character. It says she could either accept or reject her master's proposal to accompany him to another state and become his mistress and housekeeper. If she rejected him, however, he threatened to sell her to the worst plantation. So we put fear. They drove fear in us to keep us as their house wenches, point blank, or whores. Fear of reprisals made these choices a no-win situation. Yet, in spite of the consequences, many women did resist sexual advances. It says, this was a particular girl in Kentucky, however, could not be coerced or forced, and consequently she was violently attacked and beaten. In the struggle, she grabbed a knife and with it sterilized him. And from that injury, he died the next day. They automatically put her to death because back then, a slave could not overtake the master. You couldn't do that. And obviously, this was a girl. It wasn't a grown woman. It was a girl. They put her to death. So just imagine how many of our young girls, our young slave women and girls, teenagers, were put to death fighting off her slave master. Because when she comes from over there, he was taught that she was treasured, that she was precious, she was protected, and you took her out of her element, and now she's no longer there. She's out there to the open, and these strange people are talking to her and saying these things to her, and she doesn't understand that. She just doesn't understand that. Okay. Now, okay, explaining that. Okay, let's talk about another young lady. Her name, she was only 14 years old. Her name was Celia. She was 14 years old in 1850 when she was bought by Robert Newsom, a 70-year-old farmer. Now, a 70. And that's why I said this long time ago. I said the very first pedophiles were the slave master. This girl was only 14 years old. She was bought by Robert Newsom, a 70-year-old farmer. On the way home from the slave auction, he raped her. He raped her repeatedly after that until the night of June 23rd, 1855. So she was raped for 5 years. When she resisted him with force at that time, she had turned 19, was pregnant for the third time, and had been ill for the last 4 months. According to the court testimony, Celia had told Newsom that she would hurt him if he raped her while she was still sick. He didn't listen. Despite her warning, he came to her cabin that night to force sexual intercourse upon her. Celia, who armed herself with a stick, struck him twice. He died immediately thereafter, and Celia was charged with first-degree murder. Isn't that something? She's trying to protect herself and her baby because she was pregnant at the time. She wasn't feeling well, and she already told him, hey, look, no. And he did it anyway because, like I said before, in their mindset, it was all right to rape the woman. His slave, she belonged to him. She was property, so it was all right to rape her. She killed him. Now, if he was 70 when he got her, he was 75 years old, still trying to get something. That's how I look at it, still trying to roll up on some stuff. And that was crazy. Okay? That was crazy. It says captive women could not necessarily control the men with whom they had children, but there is evidence that they made difficult decisions about whether to give birth to the children who would themselves be slaves. While some women described as honored to have the MRSA, there are also numerous accounts of others who used a variety of devices, such as roll of rags and sticks inserted into the vagina and herbs and roots, or exercised excessively to terminate unwanted pregnancy. So there was a form of abortion back then. A black mother in 1863 reported, "I used to have one baby every Christmas, but when I had six, I put a stop to it and had only one every other year." Man. So, think about it. And the first deadbeat dads, I'm going to call it like it is, were slave masters. These men were pumping out babies, and then we look at the African American man doing the same thing to this day, just pumping out babies, just dropping babies, sperm all over the place. But we have to think about it. The only thing about the slave masters, it was in a controlled area. It was controlled because they were around them. And when you didn't, you think about the ideal that if you didn't listen or give them what they wanted, there was a thing called the worst plantation to go on. And you were actually sent there. Amazing. Man. We're going to stop. I'm going to take another break here. Mr. Green Beasley, it was nice talking to you. I see you have logged out, but thank you for your time. Let's see here. Let's get a little David Byrne here.
almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You see me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. My teacher tells me, in this country, we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in central Louisiana and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org.
Okay, you guys, we are back on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman, and we're talking about the book, Stolen Women. I want to thank Mr. Green Beasley, who came in and was talking to me for a second or two, which I was trying to talk and actually continue the discussion. And there's one thing I didn't get a chance to do when I started off talking about this book. I didn't explain her story, and I'm going to do that real quick here. It says, she tried to close her mind to all the sights and sounds. It was hot and noisy. Men and women dressed in strange clothes and speaking a language she did not understand surrounded her coolly. This was an auction day, and they weren't going home empty-handed. Even chained to the others, she felt lonely. Where was her village? Where were her parents? She longed for things to be the way they had been, familiar and safe. But her life would never be the same. She had been stolen. Strangers now looked at her eyes, teeth, and breath. Someone would come and feel the most private parts of her body to make sure that she was worth her price. Soon, she would be owned by one of the strangers. What happened on that auction block centuries ago is still unfinished business for African-American women today. In society, increasingly obsessed with sex, too many people, white and black, still hold the dangerous view that black women must either ignore their sexuality altogether or be perpetually sexually available. I meant to read that at first, and I didn't get a chance to. So think about that. Man, think about that. Standing there naked because they didn't have clothes. Probably they washed them off once they got them off the ships. I'm quite sure they washed them off and made them look a little bit decent to get on that auction block. And you got people poking and prodding in your vagina, in your anus, pulling on your breasts, pinching on your hips and your legs, opening up your mouth and sticking their hands in your mouth, their dirty hands, because those people back then were filthy, dirty hands in your mouth, and you're in this strange place, you smell something that don't smell like home, you know you're away from home. Just imagine how that person felt. Just imagine how that could have how they felt, how each and every one of them young black girls felt. I mean, it would have been probably like a sickening, you know. Just imagine how many people died prior to them coming over there because they were not taken care of. And they were immediately raped as soon as they got on them ships. So just imagine these unclean men poking and prodding on you, especially of another color, a race. Just imagine how they felt. What I want to do is just got to talk about, number one, these are six ways of the new sexual order when they've gotten to the new world. And the first one was sex became a negative experience. As you know, like I said, they were raped as soon as they got here. They start having babies as soon as they got here because the men just start putting their hands all over them. So they didn't get any chance to, you know, they came over here to work, and they fixed them up, so that's exactly what they did. And you became a crazy loyalty to these people that were taking your very being from you. Okay, let's see. Okay. Then what they did was, it says being naked became a commonplace. You know, over there in Africa, you didn't walk around with no clothes on. You had your genitals and your buttocks was covered, but your breasts, like we said, was symbol of life, so they were out. But when it came to back here in the States, when they came here, it says, James Madison, the former president of the United States, did not conceal his pride in his slave women. He was a proud man. One-third of his slaves were under 5 years of age, which indicate that breeding took place on his plantation as well. Okay. This falls into, let's see, the pressure increased. Number two was privacy and modesty was not respected at all. According to one eyewitness, the clothing of slaves in many cases comfortable, and in many cases was far from being so. I have very often seen slaves whose tattered rags were neither comfortable or decent. Children sometimes went naked until they were big enough to work. So your children had no protection, no modesty, no nothing. They were not taught to be modest. Okay. It says because they received constant beatings, many blacks had scars and unhealed wounds on their bodies. So, oh, my God, just imagine, man. It says Mrs. Barr saw a Negro girl about 13 years waiting around the table with a single garment, and that in the cold weather, arms and feet were bare, regularly swollen, arms burnt, and full of sores from exposure. All the Negroes under her year's care, which must have been the master, made a wretched appearance. So they beat them and allowed them to walk around butt naked with no clothes on. If they had clothes, it wasn't enough to keep them warm. And this is how we were treated. I want to continue this. I definitely got to come back and continue this Monday afternoon. We're going to stop right here because I'm down to 3 minutes now. I'm only doing an hour on this because I want to get all this in you so you can think about this. So when we come back next week, we can kind of overview, and then we'll get to the point where we stop that. We're on number two, privacy and modesty were not well respected. And these are the six ways that the new sexual order took place once in slavery our ancestors came to the new world. The things that were taken away from them, the way they were treated, this all came down to the sexual, you know, how they felt about us, the disrespecting of us. So we stopped at privacy and modesty, which was not respected. And you come from a place where it was or a place where it's not, then it's something different. So we will continue this Monday, 7 o'clock, same place, same time, same back channel. And I want you to please go to thewhitehouse.gov. It's WH.gov/QKLO is the petition that I would like for you guys to sign. I want to thank you for listening in. We'll be back Monday night. I don't think I'm taking off New Year's Eve 20 minutes. So I think most likely I'll probably be on here. So we'll come back Monday night at 7 o'clock to continue our conversation about the stolen woman. And we'll go over what we talked about earlier to get to where we're at now. I want to thank you guys for listening. Please have a safe, if you're not going to be able to listen on the 30th, July 31st, right? All I want you to have a happy new year. And, you know, you can always come back and listen to this show at any time. Let's see here.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.